Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 574 for comics originally released on August 8th, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is Sandman Universe. This is actually part of the Vertigo line, which makes sense because Sandman, I think, was part of the Vertigo line. I'm trying to think if it was originally or if Vertigo came after it. Anyways, it wound up there. It's certainly in that mindset, whatever.
Definitely. Neil Gaiman property.
Yes, and he's actually overseeing this, although I'm not sure how much of the actual writing he may have done on this issue.
Yeah, it seems limited, I would think. And just FYI for you and the people listening out there, you remember I never read DC before, so I had never read Sandman and that whole series. But I've been buying it in Omnibuy, so I have the first and second Omnibus, and I'm waiting. I pre-ordered the third, but I've never read the original.
Okay, that's good to know going in. I was wondering where you kind of fell on the whole Sandman stuff. I have the full run of it, of course, because I've been reading DC for forever and a day. But I'll admit, at times, the original series got a bit kind of artsy for me. It's a little bit out there, it's a little bit surreal, it's a little bit experimental, and that's part of the beauty of it, of course. But I'm kind of a simple guy, I like simple stuff, and sometimes it wasn't really totally in my wheelhouse.
Now, the way you summed that up is kind of how I felt about this a little bit. It seemed kind of out there, it seemed kind of different, and it's not really my preference, I would say. But this wasn't bad, per se. It's just not something that is necessarily in my wheelhouse.
Exactly, and that's why I always try to differentiate what I think is good from as objective of standpoint as I can get, and what I like, which is purely subjective.
Yes.
And I didn't dislike this, but it's the kind of thing that I like superhero stuff, I like police procedurals, I like basic mysteries and stuff. This whole, ooh, it's in the dreaming, it's different, it's however you care to describe it, it's not bad, but it's not the sort of stories that I gravitate towards, I seek out, whatever. Sometimes I enjoy them, sometimes I don't. It depends what mood I'm in.
That makes sense. And with me, when I first read through this, I was just completely lost. I was like, what is this? And the reason why is I had forgotten that they were spinning off four separate books after this. And so I was reading, I'm like, what does this have to do with this? None of this is making sense to me. And it's because there's four different jumping off points in here, which after I saw the little thing at the end, I was like, oh, yeah. Now I remember there's four different books coming out of this.
Any of the four ones you're planning on picking up?
I looked at, after reading this, I was like, wow, I wasn't really impressed with any of them. But if I had to pick, the two that I would go for is Lucifer and the Books of Magic.
Books of Magic, the one I was tempted by, but honestly, I didn't pre-order that.
Okay, I pre-ordered all of it because they had like a Vertigo bundle, and I was like, oh, I'll try them all out. This looks cool. But reading this, I was like, two of them, I'm kind of like, I don't like the two of them.
I mean, it's in line with the Sandman series, so I think they've kind of recaptured as much of the magic as can be expected. But again, that was one that sometimes worked for me, sometimes didn't.
Yeah, the books, and I'm trying to get to the page where it showed all the ones spinning out of this. The Lucifer seemed kind of cool because Lucifer, they showed him in more of a, I don't know, edgy kind of style, really demonic almost. Mm-hmm. And I liked that. It was kind of dark. And the Books of Magic seemed fun and interesting, you know, with the kid and what's going on in the classroom, a magic school, Harry Potter-ish, if you may. The House of Whispers did nothing for me, and the Dreaming, I could see there's a big adventure in the dream world, but it just didn't hook me.
Well, and that was one of the problems I had with this issue, is there was no particular character that I'm like, that's the one I want to follow, or that's the one I think I am following in this issue. If anything, it was the Crow, I think, or the Raven.
Yeah, the Raven. That's probably who I was following. And then I wanted to say Lucifer, but that probably says something really bad about me, but
we're not judging. Well, maybe. No, I'm kidding.
No, I'm not a bad guy, but I don't know why, but I kind of like that, like that dark imaging and what happened with the crow and all that. That was kind of cool. I was like, it's definitely gruesome. I was like, wow, that's a different depiction than the TV series and everything that we saw from that.
Yeah, yeah. I guess for me, some of this gets a little dark. Some of it just gets, like I said, a little kind of out there, surreal or whatever. The only one of these characters that really I kind of followed for a length of time prior to all of this was Tim Hunter from Books of Magic.
Okay.
It's just, this is a little bit more on kind of, for lack of a better term, the cosmic side of things. And, you know, it's not for me. I'm fine with that. I don't feel like I'm going to miss out anything by not getting these. I think there's an audience for this, and I think that audience is probably going to really love this stuff. I think it's well done. It's just not a story I feel the need to keep going with.
No, I understand exactly where you're coming from. When I read this, I was just like, my first read through, my first instinct was, okay, I'm getting rid of this bundle off my package and just picking some of those other Vertigo books that came out, because I was like, I really don't like this. The second read through, when I read it a little quicker, two of them came out as okay stories. And not enough to make me really, it makes me question, is it worth the $4? Or, you know, even, I'm saying people, if they're paying $3.99, I get a discount, but I don't know if I was paying the full $4 if this would not hook me. And it seemed like the writers and the artists they put on this were a lot of, I hate saying that, but not very popular names, no names.
Simon Spurrier's done some stuff.
Yes, Simon Spurrier. I don't like him as a writer. I hate saying that. I'm sorry.
No, you're not saying he's a bad writer. You're saying you don't like him. Everybody has writers they like and some they don't. There's nothing right or wrong about that. Most of these other names, though, I don't really recognize, which isn't good or bad. I'm not great with tracking, you know, writers and stuff, but it's not like they've got a slew of, wow, these are, you know, big name creators that of course they've gotten working on this.
Exactly. They were more like, I would almost, I hate saying that term, but almost like no names. I don't know who Cat Howard, Nalo Hopkins, or Dan Waters are. Never heard of their names. And the artists too. I didn't know any of the artists. So it's definitely not top tier talent, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just they're not popular superhero writers per se.
Exactly. This could be stuff that they're big in other parts of the world or in other stuff that we just aren't reading. I would think that with a name like Nalo Hopkins, that's an unusual enough name that I would think I would remember it if I'd seen it before. But, you know, I forget a lot of names. I've had a lot of times where on the podcast, I'm like, I haven't read anything by so-and-so. And somebody will chime in on email or whatever. Well, actually, you've read these works by this person. I'm like, damn, I have.
You're like, I forgot that.
I'm reading like 200. Well, I'm behind on my reading. But when I'm current, I'm reading about 200 titles or 200 comics a month. I can't keep that many names straight.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. There's some people who stick with you because you like what they're writing, either whether it be a superhero thing or some independent thing or some off the beaten path, but they write it well. And so I remember that name.
I'll be honest. And maybe I'm just getting old. I think when I think big name creators and stuff, I think a lot of the names that popped to my mind were big names like a few decades ago.
That makes sense.
And
I mean,
today's big names seem like newcomers to me.
Oh. Yeah, you're like, Donny Cates, he's a newcomer.
Yeah, who is this kid, you know?
He's writing some good stuff, but yeah, he is relatively new. I mean, he hasn't written a ton of stuff a few years, you know?
It all comes down to your frame of reference and stuff, and I think these writers and these artists did a good job on this.
Yeah, it's not a bad job at all. It's just it's not my cup of tea, and that makes me worried because I bought all those omnibus, so I will read them, but it makes me a little worried.
I think with the original Sandman run, that's something that's worth reading, even if it's not exactly your cup of tea, because it is widely regarded as being just great, great stuff. And either you'll agree with it or you won't. Either you'll enjoy it or you won't. But it's like when kids are forced to read all the great works of English literature, you know, growing up in high school and stuff. It's good to know what is considered great, even if you don't necessarily, you know, agree with it. Or maybe you will. Maybe you'll love it and stuff.
Exactly. And Neil Gaiman's a great writer. And the, like I said, these writers are what, not what I would consider great writers. So his take on it may be something that I really enjoy. But yeah, you're like, I agree with you. There's things that everyone who reads comics should have read. Watchmen, you know,
yeah.
Or Sandman, or those big things that just stick out to you. Kingdom Come is one that I bought in a trade, but I know it's good. I just haven't read it.
There's a lot of stuff that I think is just worth reading. And certainly, the original Sandman stuff is worth it. That's a lot of what put Neil Gaiman kind of on the map is the guy he is today. And I'm glad he's coming back and revisiting this stuff. But I'm also, while I thought this was a good issue, I've got plenty on my reading plate as it is. So I'm passing on all four of the things spinning out of this.
I can completely understand that. There's two of them I may check out. I mean, well, I'm checking out the first issues of all of them because I had pre-ordered them. But for the second issues, there's only two of them that I may stick with.
All right. Well, if they turn out great, let me know, and I'll check them out. Maybe, maybe not. Don't know. But be curious what you think either way.
Definitely. And with me, just so you know, I don't think this was bad. I think it was decent. It didn't hook me. And not knowing anything come in, not hooking me. I went with a C+ on that.
I can understand that. I went with a B-. Again, I think this is some quality stuff. It just isn't quality stuff that I feel that I need to be reading.
And that makes sense. And if time is an issue, which it is with you, you need to read what you want to read and not just add filler in there just to keep you busy.
Exactly. Exactly. If it was something where it's just, geez, there's not enough coming out, I'm blowing through my reading stack too quickly, I need more, I probably would have at least picked up Books of Magic. After that, maybe The Dreaming. I really don't know about Lucifer or House of Whispers.
Yeah, Lucifer did not look like the take that you would like.
Yeah, those seemed like hard sells to me, but that's just me.
Yeah, understandable.
So, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, definitely.
This is Fantastic Four number one, and it has been far, far too long since we've had a Fantastic Four title. I think that was basically a mistake on Marvel's part. Not the first time, probably won't be the last time. I did think to catch up on Marvel 2-in-1 before reading this. Have you been reading that title?
I have been reading it, and I have been enjoying it.
I kind of think it left off, you know, where it's in the middle of a story.
Yeah, it completely.
It didn't seem to, like, lead into this like I was kind of thinking it might.
Yeah, when I first saw Fantastic Four in my box, I forgot it was coming out this week. I was like, how can they be back together when that was never addressed in the Marvel 2-in-1? That it's just there, you know, they're on the search, and it just left off.
We've got not two lead stories. We've got two stories in a backup feature. How about that?
Yes.
And the first one, Signal in the Sky, there were parts of it like the Lost Tale. It was a flashback thing I really enjoyed. There were other parts of it not so much. The bit with Ben and Alicia, which makes perfect sense with these characters, isn't a bad move. It felt like bad timing given a couple of other comic stories lines that have gone on of late.
Exactly. I remember reading it and I said, again?
Exactly. It's like we've seen this sort of a thing before. I can guess how it may turn out.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed the final page of the story.
Oh, I loved it.
And it was cool. It was good. But I've also been really wanting a Fantastic Four title back again for a while, because it was one of the first titles I got on with Marvel on a regular basis. It was one of the first I had originally sampled, and then years later when I said, oh, this John Byrne guy is doing stuff at Marvel, he's a good artist, Alpha Flight and Fantastic Four were the two titles.
Oh, okay. Yes, you go way back with it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've always liked the Fantastic Four. I remember when I started buying back issues and stuff, I kind of saw this as the first, you know, kickoff of the Marvel thing. And so I tried to buy old copies of Fantastic Four and read them. I mean, they're super expensive. I didn't get a ton of them, but I have, like, probably from the mid-100s on, I have everything Fantastic Four. And I've read most of it, and I like it. I like the dynamics between Johnny and the Thing. So I've always loved that, and that's why Marvel 2-in-1, even though the Fantastic Four was gone, I've enjoyed that book. And this one deals a lot with those two, which I did like.
Well, it's funny because between that story and the next one we'll talk about in a sec, this kind of felt like it should have been maybe, it could have been, maybe should have been the final issue of a Marvel 2-in-1 series instead of the first issue of a Fantastic Four series, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean by that, because this literally could have been a $4.99 final issue for the size of the story that we got here, and that would have left off to the perfect Fantastic Four number one. But after I read it a couple times and I did my review and I kind of wrote down my score, I realized there's some people who really didn't like this because this didn't feel like a number one. It felt like where the number one should have started at the end.
Well, between where we see Ben and Johnny in that first story and what we see in this next one with Victor, the current storyline, they're on, what, issue 8 or so of Marvel 2-in-1?
Yeah, it's something like that. I can't remember, but yeah, that sounds about right.
So they're 2 issues into a story arc. Let's suppose hypothetically it goes for, I don't know, 6 issues, like stories are wont to do these days. That means we're 4 issues away from that story ending prior to these stories taking place.
Exactly.
That's a little ridiculous.
Yeah, it is kind of ridiculous. And that whole book has been the search for the missing members. So it was just kind of weird that I expected it to happen there. And I went back and I read my Marvel 2-in-1 after I read this the first time. I was like, wait a minute, did they get back together? I don't remember reading that. And lo and behold, they didn't.
It makes the whole run of Marvel 2-in-1 of this volume to date pointless.
Yes.
It tells us what's going to happen with Johnny and Ben in the current story arc. So, okay, there's no surreal suspense there. Not that it's a big shock. There are certain storylines that, you know, it's like, oh, gosh, are they going to kill the lead character? No, probably not. He'll survive. I mean, you expect those things. But then when I got to this second story here with Victor Von Doom, and they're bring in him. I mean, we got the Doom bots, which are always cool and stuff, but then we actually see Doom, and I'm like, well, he's sporting a new look.
Yeah.
And wow, that's different.
Yeah, very different than what we've seen recently.
Yeah, and they harken back to the, with the Doom bots and some other stuff, the classic look of Doom and aspects of it, and they give things about his current status quo, which is current for this issue, but future for Marvel 2-in-1, where he's a key player. And I'm like, well, I guess certain things are going to happen with that character there.
Yep.
Which kind of steals a little thunder from that story.
Yes, it does.
and here with Zora and all what's going on with her and stuff, the direction they take with Victor is new. It's not radically different. We've seen a similar-ish take before. But certainly the look is new. It's going to take a little getting used to, and we'll see how it goes. I'm curious where they're going with him, but it's in keeping with kind of his nature and his history, so I'll give him that. I liked the story, but the timing on this versus the Marvel 2-in-1 really doesn't work to either title's advantage.
That makes sense, because when I was reading this, I was reading it kind of in a vacuum. When I say reading it in a vacuum, I wasn't taking into account the stuff I've been reading in Marvel 2-in-1 that much. I just went to see, I'm like, did I miss an issue where they got back together? Maybe I missed one. This story, it does seem like it should have taken place over there. And that being said, this is not a bad story. I liked the look of Doom a little bit, but just the characterization that just visiting a place, all of a sudden you get a monumental change in your character. That just seemed like a resetting of the table and kind of jarring a little bit.
I think there's something that happens in Marvel 2-in-1 that we haven't seen yet that leads to this status quo for Doom.
There has to be, because the way this was presented, I'm just like, that continuity-wise, this makes no sense. Yeah. So something has to happen. I want to see what happens. And I want to see maybe more of Sue and Reed and where they show up in Marvel 2-in-1. Maybe this takes place a little bit in the future.
I'd like to see more of them, too.
I'd like to see them, period. No, this story, Now, one thing I wanted to ask you, did you like the little tease of the sign in the sky?
At the end of the first one?
Beginning? Well, yeah, they had the one at the beginning and then they had the one at the end. Did you like the tease at the beginning?
Not at the beginning, because it was the wrong thing. Basically, okay. What happens there is somebody shoots a flare gun up and it is Fantastic Four in all letters.
Yes.
And the classic one from FF number one, I don't think it did that, and maybe I'm misremembering, but I thought it did basically a giant four, possibly with a circle around it, possibly not. But basically, it's like, you know, it's a four. What more do you need? You don't need to spell it out for these people.
Exactly. What was weird is I got kind of excited. I was like, wow, it's happening. And then you get the zigzag, and you're like, you get a little frustrated. that was just kind of interesting. I think that's going to irritate some people. And me, I was like, you know, a little bit of a letdown. But it felt like, I think Slott was trying to build like a little bit of a roller coaster ride in this book.
I guess I just couldn't figure out what the point of the people sending that off, what they thought they were doing, and why they did it.
That made no sense, except for if you look at the age of the people, maybe you could see something like that. But why they did it, I have no clue.
To me, the affiliation they had kind of explained a little of the why, but I just don't get what they thought they were doing.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes complete sense. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you in here, without spoiling it, the emotional thing that goes on with Johnny, did you like that or not?
He objects to something, and I felt his objection, again, not wanting to give it away, was completely in character and made perfect sense, and I kind of agree with it.
I did too. I really liked it, and I liked the way it played out, and I was surprised that some people really hated that and said, that's not the way someone should react. And it felt genuine. I liked it.
Part of it, though, is not knowing how their journey in Marvel 2-in-1 ends. There's got to be something that ended that for them to be here.
Correct. Yeah, so we're almost kind of like excited to see what's going on in Marvel 2-in-1 so we can figure out why in the heck this stuff is happening.
Well, not knowing what happened, it changes the tone of this scene.
Yeah, it's almost like this book should have been delayed a little bit, and I don't know why the rush to bring it out now.
I think the timing on this was a mistake.
I do too, because maybe this would have lined up where that 2-in-1 story ended in December, and they didn't want this being a January book, which makes no sense to me, but that's the only thing I could guess. But that would be the one strike, is the timing's just off because the two stories don't correlate.
There's a gap in time, like I said before. It steals thunder from both stories, surprisingly. And I think if they had gotten to a point where it's like, okay, here's where we're going with the next, you know, arc in Marvel 2-in-1, big special-sized launch, because, oh, it's this big thing, and they tease something, and it turns out, well, maybe they're fibbing a little, and we get this instead, and boom, the next issue is it's gone, because now we get a true Fantastic Four number one or something, and just they kind of try to surprise us or something like that. Maybe that'll work, maybe it wouldn't, but they promised the Fantastic Four here.
Yes.
And we got, essentially, a future issue of Marvel 2-in-1 instead. And I think they anticipated that based on that one-page thing at the end with the Impossible Man, where he's a little upset with what happened here.
Yeah, that's true. So this basically, we did read the final issue of Marvel 2-in-1.
I don't know if it's the final one, but it's a future issue of it at the very least, because they could keep it going afterwards.
Yeah, it's true. They could. They could still have the dynamic duo team up, which would be good, and I'll continue to read it.
Or they could just, you know, boot Johnny out and have rotating guest stars like they used to, or whatever.
Exactly, with the Thing and whoever, fighting Man-Thing or teaming up with the Hulk.
Something. But I think they anticipated people being a little unhappy with, you know, did they get the band back together? Are things as we expect or whatever? And tried to preempt that or deal with that a little here. And this didn't feel like the number one issue it could have and should have been. And the fact that it's mid-story over in Marvel 2-in-1, which is the obvious precursor to this, frustrating.
I can see that. Although I can see the frustration, this book did make me happy. It left me feeling happy, and it left me feeling excited for more.
I know
that's weird. I enjoyed it a lot. It brought a smile to my face when I read it.
I liked it. It certainly had some good moments, but I think if I had been able to finish the current uncompleted story arc in Marvel 2-in-1 with presumably the next four issues that come out completing it, and then read this, I think I would have enjoyed this more.
And I can understand that. I truly can. And like I said, my first instinct when reading this was like, did I miss an issue? Did Eric not mail it to me? What's going on? And I went back, I was like, No, that's what happened. Okay, I'm good.
Well, and that's the other thing is, and maybe I'm going to end up penalizing this issue a little because of it, but continuity at Marvel sucks.
Oh, it really does. It seems like the writers are kind of given a little bit too much or a lot bit too much slack.
Not just the writers. I'm going to blame the artists, too.
The artists, yes, everyone.
I've been catching up on some of the X-Men books and trying to do them. You know, I'm reading an arc at a time, but reading them in more or less the order they started. And the Beast is cat-like in one and more classic Beast in another.
Yeah, that's true.
At the same time, in the same mansion, in the same Beast.
And you're looking at it going, what's going on? The X-Men confuse me right now. They're very, you read it and you're just like, it's a continuity nightmare.
I'm doing okay with it, but when they can't even decide what a character looks like.
That's rough.
It bothers me.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I don't know if they've just told the editors put out good material. We don't care. I don't know what it is, but I have noticed it quite a bit that the continuity has been just kind of like, oh, you're done with your arc. Okay, go with your arc and almost whatever you want to do, go with it. We'll write it in later.
If you want to use a character who's headlining in another book and you don't know anything about their current status quo, oh, who cares?
Who cares?
Maybe they're dead. Maybe they look different. Maybe they're depowered or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Hopefully not if maybe they're dead.
Think back to 2 weeks ago when we were talking about Sentry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah, maybe they're dead.
If continuity doesn't matter to the publisher, should it matter to me? If they want to tell stories out of order, if they want to have characters in a shared universe not look like themselves consistently, if it doesn't matter to them, should I bother? And if I shouldn't bother, I could really cut my reading a lot.
That I can see where you're coming from with that. That does make sense. I think Marvel should have tighter continuity with a lot of their line, and they should have leeway with some other books. Some other books should not be part of the central Marvel thing. Like, and I hate to say this, and not making any book sound bad, but I don't care if Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur is not in continuity. I don't care if Squirrel Girl is.
There are a couple of books targeted to a younger audience or a more diverse audience or whatever than us hardcore comic fans.
Exactly. And I think they should have a section of those books that they can do whatever and use whoever. And here's a great story for younger people. And if they want to do that at they're outsourcing some of the books to IDW, that's fine. But I think the core stuff, you know, especially the team books and, you know, the main characters that you're seeing in the movie theater, that should be somewhat consistent. What's going on, how that character is portrayed and how they look should be consistent. And that's missing with a lot of the core characters, which is kind of sad.
Yeah. And that's the beef I've got.
And I can understand it. And me, sometimes I'm like, maybe I just didn't remember it correctly, but now I'm starting to think, no, it's them. It's not me.
There's one particular mutant that is, I'm going to use the term, even though I don't think it's necessarily accurate, clean shaven in some books and bearded in another.
I think I know who you're talking about.
And I'm like, wait, these books are all taking place around the X-Men mansion, around the exact same point in time. Is he shaving or not kind of thing? You know, and that may seem like complete nitpicking and stuff, and to a degree, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but if you decided the look of the character is thus and so, except over here it's this other thing, and they're happening concurrently, it's jarring. It takes me out of the story.
Yeah, it makes sense. That makes complete sense.
I mean, it's not as bad as if, you know, the big blue furball of the Beast is cat-like or not. That's a lot more jarring. But, yeah.
And that this book will do that to you because stuff has not taken place for this book to be where it is.
Exactly.
And so if you are a linear continuity person, this is going to throw you off a lot.
Well, the three lead characters in this issue of Ben, Johnny, and Vic.
John, I can't hear you.
Damn it, we lose it again?
Oh, I can hear you now.
You can hear me now. Okay, so that's just for a few seconds then. That's not too bad.
Okay.
So the three lead characters here of Ben, Johnny, and Vic, all three of them are in a different status quo than what we're currently seeing in the current storyline over Marvel 2-in-1.
That is true.
I mean, they're 3 for 3 here.
Correct.
It doesn't make sense to me.
So you almost have to time warp your thinking and realize you're reading into the future, which may or may not come to pass the way it should, and we don't know yet.
But it does it to the detriment of this issue and to the current story arc, so the next presumably 4 issues of Marvel 2-in-1, for me.
That's true. I see where you're coming from with that.
So I was frustrated by that. While I enjoyed parts of this issue, they obviously expected a negative reaction to parts of it, which I kind of share, because it's not an unexpected reaction. I was disappointed. This was not everything I was hoping it could be, and more. It was less, and it was still good. I'm gonna go with a B minus on this, but they burn off a little goodwill. You know what I mean?
No, I understand. I've been missing the Fantastic Four. I liked the book. It made me happy when I was reading it. And it did miss a little bit in that it ended on a really great note, but in between it can be a little bit frustrating because you're waiting for something to happen that does not happen. I went with a B+.
I can see that. Hoping that they kind of write things on the next issue as they promise that they will. And I'm hoping it's great stuff because I'm really wanting a good Fantastic Four book.
Me too. I really want to have a good one, and I think they picked the correct writer.
I think so. We'll find out, but it may take another issue or two. We'll see.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes, I'm interested to see what you have to say.
This is Black Badge number 1 from Boom Studios. This is the basic concept here is imagine a bunch of Boy Scouts getting used as essentially international spies.
Yeah, like almost like a Black Ops type team.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe not almost, maybe exactly.
Exactly.
There were a couple of things about this that worked for me, a couple of things that didn't. They're clearly in the inside front cover referencing the Boy Scouts handbook and things like that. So they're trying to leverage that kind of cultural awareness of Boy Scouts and go with a different take. Okay, not a problem. The art style is a little looser than I tend to like. It's not bad.
Yes.
But, I mean, it tells the story fine, but it's not one that I'm thinking, wow, I love the art. I could work with the art.
Yeah, Tyler, is it Tyler Jenkins? He does that a lot for me.
Yeah. And there were one or two places here where there was a bit of profanity, which I felt was ill-placed. Not much. It wasn't like it was all over the place, but I don't think it fit basically having a group of people at least pretending to be Boy Scouts, and in one case actually probably being a Boy Scout. Although I think one of them Mitz looks like, I'm assuming, a girl.
Yeah,
so,
one I think was a girl. Yeah, Mitz looked like a female to me.
So how she's a Boy Scout, I don't know.
I know. She's not. She's a Black Badge.
I guess. But there was some clunky exposition for what a Black Badge is, and certainly for the new guy, Willie's backstory or whatever. One of those classic, oh, he earned every merit badge there is. Really?
But that's tough to do. Were you a Boy Scout growing up?
Yes, I was. Matter of fact, I made it to Eagle Scout.
I'm an Eagle Scout too. Hey.
All right, so we may be coming at this from a similar vantage point in terms of there are ranks, there are things you have to do to earn the badges, and they treat them like a Pokemon collection.
Yes, exactly.
And there are kids, no doubt, that are competitive. It's like, ooh, I must do it. They're overachievers, whatever. More power to them. But there's like, what did they say here? They said about 135 badges.
Yeah.
And if you go with the storytelling, you know, conceit of, okay, suppose they could actually earn them, which is not outrageous. Do one a week, and within 4 or 5 years, you could maybe do it. It'd be tough. You'd have to be incredibly smart. But, I mean, that's the kind of person you'd want for a Black Ops mission. Somebody who just happens to know everything from basket weaving to scuba diving to whatever else they do merit badges in these days.
Archery and everything else.
Yeah. It just, I don't know, it seemed a little out there, and it seemed like a lot of the stuff they were doing with being scouts, it seemed like Matt Kent, the writer here, was aware of scouts but was probably never actually one, and it just felt like they glossed over. It's like, oh, they do camping and make fires and stuff like that, you know?
And collect badges. Yeah, the Boy Scouting in here was definitely like played down a little bit. Matt Kent, I'm pretty sure, was never a Boy Scout when I read this, but he understands kind of the basic concept.
Up until the one guy got the golden sextant badge like 10 times.
Exactly. Then I was like, you get the badge once. There's no 10 times. There's no multiples.
Even in the solicit, among their organization, the black badges are the elite, the best of the best. They're feared by even the other badges. I'm like, wait a sec. What the hell does that mean?
You were never feared for having too many badges.
In this issue, nobody knows who the black badges are.
Correct.
So how can they be feared by the other badges? One, what the hell does the other badges, what does that mean? But even if it meant something like presumably the other scouts, they don't know about the black badges. How could they fear them?
Exactly. The guy who's kind of introduced as a new character, just a regular old Boy Scout, has no clue what a black badge is. He thinks it's just another merit badge.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, exactly. There's no fear because you don't know.
So there's aspects here where it's a little clunky in the storytelling, a little inconsistent on the premise, but okay, fine. It's still an entertaining story if you can ride with all that craziness.
Oh, yeah.
It just, there was a bit of exposition on some stuff that was a little just, they're trying to sleep and this kid's telling his life story. Really? I mean, I believe that he would. I don't believe he would have survived the event.
They might have cut his throat, yeah.
Something. I don't know. It was not gory, but in a certain sense, the way the story ended, it was kind of dark.
It's very dark, and I don't know why. I think it's something about my sensibilities and who I am. You know I like reading darker, mm-hmm. off stuff. This kind of drew me in. I was like, this is kind of a cool story. It's a cool take on, you know, I grew up a Boy Scout, but so I understand the concept. And yeah, Matt Kent was never a Boy Scout, but I was reading this. I was like, that's such a cool take. And I could see that being something, because who's ever going to suspect, you know, 15 and 16 year old kids of being this hardcore Black Ops team or group?
I agree with that. It just seemed a little far-fetched that you've got a couple of kids out in the middle of wherever they are, South Korea, I guess it is.
Oh, yeah, and they get across to North Korea without getting blown up by a landmine.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're out there. They don't have a scoutmaster. They don't have this. It's like, okay, it's a story. You gotta take a certain amount of reality and just ditch it. Okay.
You have to.
And if you can, and I'll admit I was struggling in places with that, there is a aspect of the premise that I think has a lot of potential. It's almost if you took a dark take on, like, I'm going to say a Disney action adventure, you know, half hour show or whatever. It's like they're Boy Scouts, but they're black op operatives.
Exactly.
it's an intriguing premise that has some fun possibilities.
Exactly. If you take this thing too seriously, you're going to hate the book because you realize there's a lot of stuff missing here. Just like getting across the DMZ and interacting with maybe North Korean soldiers. I don't think they just say, oh, go back home, kids, you know? That just didn't pass muster. But if you take this as something out there and a different take and different concept and a cool, you know, here's the concept, this is very entertaining.
I'm hoping we get more characterization for Kenny, Cliff, and Mitz, the other three members of the team.
Yeah, because this was spent mostly on the one guy. I'm trying to remember his name.
Willie.
Willie, yeah, Willie.
who was a bit cliche or whatever, and frankly a little annoying.
Yeah, he was the most annoying of the group. The other ones are a little more hardened. And I'm hoping the next issue gives us the backstory on the three.
Or at least one of them, and then the next on the next issue, that kind of a thing. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, because he could do like maybe 2 to 4 pages on each one of them at each issue. Maybe even like a little backstory, you know, like a little clip on here's how Mitzi came into the group.
Hopefully it's not a let's stop the story for a few pages of exposition to get all that and then move on. But that's kind of what we got here. I don't know.
Exactly. So, I mean, but overall, I think the concept is really cool. Matt Kent should have just done a little more research, but overall, I kind of enjoyed it.
I think it's a good premise. I think the execution, while it was a little weak in places, it was still entertaining. It told an actual full story in this issue, which is something not a lot of books do.
Correct.
And I think there's other things that this concept could have and would have been done with by other writers that would have really stretched it a lot further and made it a lot more, wow, this is amazing. This was still good. I'm on board for the first couple issues at least to see where it goes. And provided it doesn't completely, you know, turn me off or something, I'll probably stick with it.
Yeah, after what I read in here, I'm sticking with it till the end. I mean, I'm current on my book, so this hooked me enough where I want more.
I'm wanting more, too, and part of what I'm wanting more of is Matt Kent to do maybe more research. I don't know. Just...
It's true. That would help.
I mean, not only was I a Boy Scout for many, many years, got to Eagle Scout, I actually went to a World Jamboree and stuff.
Oh, I never did the Jamboree. I did. Did you ever go in the Order of the Arrow thing?
I did not do that.
I did that. So I get that was like near the end. I got, you know, inducted into the Order of the Arrow. So that was kind of cool. But, you know, I have good memories of it from my youth.
No, I think it's a good thing for kids and stuff. Certainly it's not for everybody. Not everybody has done it or whatever. But if you're going to do a story based on an organization, be it firefighters, the police, the Boy Scouts, the astronauts, whatever, do a little more research.
Oh, yeah. It would be – this almost felt like me writing a book about a police procedural, and really I haven't done any research on it, and I don't know how things work. And people are going to be like, that's not how evidence is handled. That's not how police talk. That's not how this happens. And maybe if I would have asked somebody who's actually done that stuff, a detective, it would have made more sense. And yeah. That's what he did. He said, oh, Boy Scouts, it can't be that hard. They try to get badges and they do camping. Let's make them into black ops. No, didn't talk to anyone.
Even some of it on the art, the colors for the uniforms aren't right. They don't have badges in the right places and a few things. It's... A Google search could have answered the level of research I'm expecting.
Yeah, it really could have, because I'm looking at the front cover, you know, you see the one guy with the sash. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember from my badges. I've never seen a guy with like a fisherman's like vest with badges all over it. That didn't exist.
And there was always the rank that you're at on one of the pockets or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, that's missing too. There's no rank anywhere.
The whole concept of rank is missing here.
There's no life. There's no this, no that.
They're a black ops group. There's a chain of command. Chain of command would go by rank, wouldn't it?
You would think so.
Just saying.
Yeah, you have a lot of badges. You're inducted.
Exactly. You got them all. You win. It doesn't work that way.
Well, and part of it, the badges, some of the things were so dangerous. This kid had to take off his mask and swim into a tunnel where he didn't know if there's going to be air underwater and hopefully come up at the end for air. That sounds a recipe to kill kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And does. I was just like, that doesn't happen. That's not a badge.
I think they could have done an interesting story if they had actually gone through whatever the current merit badges are and found a way that it seems maybe innocuous or whatever it is, just go get the basket weaving. But in this particular spy situation, my God, it saves the world.
Yeah, almost like a MacGyver take on it, you know? That would have been really cool. You know, like we were saying, the archery badge, and there's the one person with the archery. I think that's Mitz on the cover.
Yeah.
You know, how she used it to be completely silent and take out the enemy. Mm-hmm. How I got my badge, and here's how I'm using it. Boom.
So we'll see where they go. It was just a first issue just to tease the concept and get it out there. I'm curious where they go with it.
Me too. Like I said, concept of BA A+, the story itself, that's where there's some rough things.
Yeah, yeah. And I reserve the right to mock it incessantly if it continues to do mockable things.
Hey, me too. So what's your score on this one?
For this one, I'm actually going to go with a B. I think the art could have been better, the story a little more to my liking, but it was a different concept than we've seen before, and it was a fun concept. And again, they got a full issue out that set the scene moving forward. So I was pleased with that.
Yeah, I think the story was enough. And a lot of times with the first issue, you don't get enough story. Love the concept. Love it, love it, love it. It's not authentic, but I still love it. And I liked it a little bit more than you. I give it a B+.
Cool.
So anyways, that's really cool that we both were Scouts. I didn't know you were an Eagle Scout. That's really cool.
That was many, many, many years ago.
Me too. And then, I believe it or not, I went into the military right out of high school and then finished college later on.
Almost went that path, but didn't. It's interesting. Again, it's cool when writers find a new concept and don't just do another of, well, we've seen this 1,000 times before.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And one thing I was going to ask you know, like these, have you read Neil Gaiman's work, right? You read Sandman a long time ago?
Yes.
Did you like it? Do you think that was better than what we reviewed?
That's a tough question to answer because I think there were certain parts of it that absolutely were head and shoulders above what we read here. I'll be honest, there were other arcs where, because the art was so abstract, it got between me and the story, and there were other stories that just, I wasn't into it at the time. But I was reading it when it was coming out, and I was perhaps a little younger than the target audience.
See, that's the thing. I don't know. Like I said, I should have probably researched a little bit more, but I think I need to read it anyways, you know, before I bought the big three omnibus of these things, or omnibuy. I don't know how you omnibuses, omnibuy. But the thing is, when I read Neil Gaiman's American, what is it, American Gods?
Yeah, I
He
think
has a
so.
T. Yeah, he has a TV series right now. I think it's on Showtime. Amazing. The TV series hooked me. I read the comic book adaptation, and the art was so abstract. And I don't know if that's like a Neil Gaiman wanted it to look like that abstract, that it almost pulls me out of the story where I didn't enjoy it.
Was it an adaptation or did the comic come first?
No, it was a book that came first, then they
Okay.
came out with the TV series, then they came out with the comic. So
Okay,
this is like the
so it was
third.
an adaptation. All right, that's fair.
Yeah, so it's like third string now. But it was weird that I know the book, people love the book, and the TV series, that was my first introduction. I'd never read the book, but I love the TV series, so I was like, I'm getting that comic. And then I saw the art, and I was just like, it just pulled me so far out of it. I was like, oh, I just can't get past the art.
Yeah, for me, there are certain art styles that on particular books I'm fine with, on other books I rebel against. And there are times where the art really just pulls me into the story, and other times it prevents me from getting into the story. And I could read the exact same story, even with the same panel layouts and the same action in it, but just with a tighter, cleaner art style or whatever, and have a very different reaction to it. And I think with Sandman in particular, because it's dealing with more abstract kind of concepts and things like the dreaming and stuff like that, a more abstract art style makes sense,
Okay.
but it's not necessarily what I'm into.
Which okay, that makes sense to me. So it may take me a while. Like I said, it's tons of it's thick, a lot of material. But I'm going to read it. I'm going to read Kingdom Come. I'm going to read all these. And I've read Watchmen, but Watchmen, it was so surprising to me that the art's a little rougher than what I would expect. But it was more the writing was really good.
The art was by Brian Bolan on Watchmen, wasn't it?
I think so. Did
He's
you?
a pretty tight, detailed
Was
artist.
he? Oh my gosh, what did
Maybe
I
you're thinking
read?
the pirate stuff that's at the end of it or whatever.
Possibly, yeah.
That was a
Anyways.
definitely looser style or whatever.
Okay, yeah, it must be. I was just like, or it must be a different book that I'm thinking of, but anyways, it's just like I was surprised how like art can sometimes like turn me off to something so much. And comics is such a visual medium, you know, like if you really don't enjoy one, it's hard to enjoy the other. I mean, you can do it, but it makes it so much more difficult.
Absolutely. I think if they, well, not even if you like them both, if they're not working in tandem, it can push you out.
It really can. So you really got to have the right mix.
Yeah, it's, and that's where I think good editors have really done some amazing work, where they've got just a really talented writer and they match him up with a really compatible, good artist and just get some great stuff out of him. Because when the writer and the artist are not just, philosophically, but metaphorically and literally on the same page, you just get a book that's better and better and better.
Oh yeah, and on the flip side, sometimes like an artist can elevate the writer's work. Like, have you been reading the new Amazing Spider-Man?
Not the new one, I'm still behind on that.
Okay, I've been reading it and it's good, but the art is elevating the story for me because Ryan Otley, I love his drawing of Spider-Man in there, so he's elevated the book for me just by his art style.
Yeah, there are definitely a couple of books that I think if it had been done by a different artist, I'd have been, yeah, that was interesting, but I don't know if I'll read more. And then others where it's like, wow, it works for me.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. So I mean, and this one, like the Fantastic Four one, that was one of the things that, and we didn't talk a lot about the art. Sarah Pacelli, she's a great artist, but this seemed a little bit rougher for her work than what I'm accustomed to in the past with like Spider-Man.
I would agree with that. There were a couple of places where there was something off with the art.
Yeah, you felt it too. That was the one thing I was looking at. I was like, this is Sarah Pacelli, and I know she's a much better artist than what I'm seeing on the page here, and I don't know what that disconnect is. I couldn't identify what particular thing, but there was something off.
There's one panel, and I don't want to give too much detail about it, but it's a couple of pages from the end. I think it's the last time we see Ben, Johnny, and Alicia.
Okay.
And it's the bottom of a page, and it almost feels like there's a compositing issue there with the way Johnny is compared to other characters and such. And the way Ben's face is, it almost makes him, I'm trying to think what's the right way to phrase this, almost not part of the story, if you know what I mean.
No, I'm looking at it and I know what you're saying. That makes, yeah, it makes sense. It's like, it seems off, weird.
And it's not a badly drawn panel, is the thing. You know, it's just there are things that when you put it all together, it's like it swing and a miss.
Exactly, yeah. Just little things like that. So, I mean, but, you know, like I said, I'm not an art expert. I'm not an art critic. But I know when I see something that I like, and I know when I see something I don't like. And the one that I like the least tonight will probably be Tyler Jenkins, just because it's not my preference. He always draws in that kind of a way, but the art was enough to, it didn't pull me out of the story.
Yeah, it didn't pull me out, but it didn't help draw me in.
Yeah, that's, it's more like it's just there. Now, was he the artist? Did you read Department H by Matt Kent?
I don't think I did.
I don't know if it's Department H or Depth, you know, and that's an H, but they spelled
that one
it out.
I definitely didn't. I know which one you're talking about, though.
Yeah. So I actually ordered the hardcover. Like, there I am buying collections again that I'll never read because I'm backed up on those things. But I think it might be the same artist. I think they did that one together. So I have to get used to this art style if I'm going to read that hardcover.
I'm not. There's some of Matt Kent's stuff I've followed. Some of it I haven't. And the more independent it gets, the less likely I've followed it. Just the way I go.
Now, with you being behind, did you know that this is the last issue of Image Plus that's coming out?
Somebody had mentioned that on the Slack channel. Otherwise, I would be unaware.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I don't know why they're getting rid of it, because I really liked Image Plus, and I really liked that DC Nation, and I was kind of hoping that Marvel would have one eventually.
Marvel used to have one of, was it Marvel Fanfare or Marvel Spotlight? They've had a few over the years. I don't see the DC one stopping anytime soon. The Image one doesn't surprise me, because that is both a cost and work that the Image, presumably Image Central office or whichever Image office, has to do that they're really not making any huge benefit from.
Yeah, I liked it more because, well, I noticed in previews like this time, some of the Image books, they were showing some of the pages out of there. But I liked it in Image Plus, they would give you like almost like 4 or 5 pages of every new comic that was coming out, so you could see what you were buying versus just a picture. And I hate having to track down stuff online, so I'm gonna miss that.
I like it when they actually show a couple of pages of interior art in the solicit, and they've got the room on some of the Image stuff, they could do that. But yeah, it's a shame. I think the more information they can give at the pre-order time, the better.
Yeah, I agree. And then one thing, I didn't know if you wanted to talk about this, but I just told you, I posted on the Slack channel about that Walmart stuff that was going on. Did you notice that, I guess the collectibles are being compressed at Walmart's, the space that's being allocated to them right when these comics are rolling out?
I had not noticed it as such when I picked up, because I picked up the second issue of Superman and Justice League recently. Matter of fact, I posted about that on the Slack channel. What I did notice is that the one I went to, which is the one by my office, let me put it this way, it's on that side of town, and I live on the other side, so it's not hideously convenient, but it's fine. instead of having that stand-up display where you could just look down the aisle, oh, there they are, I actually had to walk down the aisle, and they were flat on one of the lower shelves. So if you're looking for something a bit more noticeable, they're not there, and even then, some of them are kind of stacked behind and stuff like that. So it did look like they might be changing how they were racking them to not be as visible. But yeah, what you were putting on the Slack channel and stuff of where they're cutting down to, what, 8 feet or whatever versus 20 or something.
Yeah, they were like almost like overlapping the display where like two or three comics were overlapping each other in like one tiny box, and then the collectible cards are just kind of going to be stacked up on the side of them. I guess I don't know if it's just savings. It's not worth it to them allocating this much space. But I was like, man, talk about bad luck. Right when you roll this thing out on the second issue, they're compacting the space that much from 20 something feet to 8 feet.
Does not seem like it's a good combination, but probably something that was already underway before the DC stuff happened, probably.
That's what I don't think it's because of the issue ones or anything. I think it's just horrible timing. Like, probably somewhat of Walmart decided we're going to allocate this much space while this deal was being worked out over here. And then it just happened. You know, I mean, the comics are still there. It's just they're not as visible, which is kind of sad if you're looking for that casual fan base to go in and pick them up.
It almost seems like they might have been better off, instead of going exclusive to Walmart, doing it with GameStop.
Yeah, GameStop probably would have been an interesting thing. Didn't they talk about putting in spinner racks at GameStop? So it was only like 20 or 30 of them, but I thought I read a story somewhere online that they were talking about.
Talked about turning GameStop into a nationwide comic chain of sorts.
Really? I did not know that.
Now, granted, Hastings went down a similar path, and that didn't work for them. Maybe it'll work for GameStop, maybe it won't. I don't know. But certainly if there were, you know, exclusives at a GameStop, and they'd be willing to, I don't know, hold them for me or something like that, to where it wasn't a complete pain, I'd consider that. Going to, like, Cowabunga and stuff than a GameStop. But, you know, I'll do what I got to get the stuff.
Oh, yeah. Hey, one last annoying question I had for you. I'm full of annoying questions.
It's okay. It's okay.
Over at DC this month and the solicits, I notice a lot of the cover A's are now with a special foil cover. I feel like the 90s are back, you know, foil covers. Next will be holograms. But the cover B's have some better artists on them. So you have like Stanley, Art Germ, Lau, or you get the cover A with the foil. So I'm like, I'm so torn on this. I don't know if you noticed that they're coming out with those special foil covers.
I noticed the foil covers. I hadn't really paid too much attention to it. Maybe I should. I think this is the wrong direction to be heading, but I guess we didn't learn from the 90s.
Yeah, the 90s are back. get the better artist or you get the foil.
I think that kind of stuff is just foolish. I mean, yeah. The reliance on gimmick covers and stuff like that is way too high. And these kinds of foil covers and whatnot, at least the variant in most cases, I think there's no minimum purchase to do. So it's not an Correct. Incentive cover. There's no hoop to jump through.
Correct.
But I'd rather they'd sell the comics based on the content than on the cover. But I've said that before.
And I'll tell you what, they're doing it very smart, because it almost got me. And I was like asking Eric online on the Slack. I was like, which way are you going with this stuff? How are you ordering? He's like, I don't know. And I'm just like, I was looking at it going, huh, I want to see what these new foil covers are about. But I like more of the artists on the cover Bs. I'm going back and forth. And two of them, I was like, I'm going to get both. And I was like, what am I doing? I'm a nutcase. I'll get one that I like and be done with it.
I will admit there are times that there is a particular cover gimmick that I can easily fall victim to and say I'll get the multiple covers.
Yeah, I'm almost there with two of them.
When they would do, like, and they did this on Dwayne McDuffie's run of Justice League, I think it was the 7th issue, where it was a matching covers for a lineup of the Justice League.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. You know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For stuff like that, I'll do it, particularly if it's a no minimum order sort of a thing. When it's a 1 in 25 and now it costs extra to get the variant, I mean, I would love to have those variant covers for the Power Ranger ones with all the Blue Rangers, the Red Rangers, all that kind of stuff. But they want a premium for that, and I don't want to pay a premium for that.
I'm with you on that. I can't pay extra for a cover. Even 10 bucks, I'm like, forget it. I'm out.
You know, I get too many comics for that. I'm not that into it. And when I start looking at that kind of a price tag on it, I start looking closer at the cover, and the cover doesn't usually benefit from that for some reason.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And I think if I was more of an active, a flipper, you know, someone who's on eBay selling these things, I could see myself being really attuned to these covers because there is a profit to be made, but I'm just not that person. I'm more into it for the story. So this month I've gone back and forth, and I think I'm going to go with the cover Bs, and get maybe two foil ones just to see what they look like.
Okay, interesting.
And that's just me, though. I prefer the better artist. And when you put Art Germ on one of them and you give me a foil cover by someone else who I don't like as much, I'll go with Art Germ.
I can understand that. The guy's talented.
Exactly. I like his style of art. It's really amazing, and I'm liking him more and more. But I won't spend $500 for it, but if you give me the option to get it open to order, I'm in.
Exactly.
So what's going on with the what's the recordings that are coming up? I know we have the
we got the Cowabunga discussion, the shop talk with them on Wednesday, August 22nd. So okay. This is probably the last time we're going to talk about it because this episode goes up on the 20th. So I guess next time we'll talk about it. Actually, maybe the time after next. I don't know. We'll talk about it again after it's happened and said what a great time we had, because I expect it to be a good time.
Definitely. That's 8 days away from the time that we're recording this, but 2 days away from probably the release.
Exactly. And then on September 2nd, which is a Sunday morning at the theoretical crack of dawn, or as early as I get up, that is the deadline for the second question and answer episode. I got an email with some questions. We've gotten some stuff posted on the forum and stuff, so we got a number of questions. I've got a vacation coming up, so I'm recording a few things early. That question and answer one's going to go up on October 12th as episode 1500 of the Comic Book Page podcast, which I think is a big deal because, I mean, these are like hour-long episodes. That's like 1500 plus hours of my time just if you stop and listen to the episodes. Not counting all the work I do to put them together.
That's an insanely big deal. Congratulations.
It's been fun. Thanks for helping out, and I thank the listeners for listening. I wouldn't be doing it if nobody was listening.
That's true.
And then the other thing we've got coming up is, let's see, by the time this is going up, the teleconference on the 18th of August will have passed, so I'll skip over that and not mention that. But I will mention what's going on Saturday, September 8th, bright and early the morning of. This is the preview spotlight deadline for September. We're doing the regular clips. Get your previews. Find your items. Oh, I like this issue. This is a good jumping on point. Oh, I've got to tell people about this. Whatever. Send in your clips as usual. One item per clip. Get the page number, all that kind of stuff. There's instructions on the forum. Easy to do. A lot of fun. It's also going to be the deadline for the October previews. We talked about this last time. I talked about it on the preview spotlight I just recorded that goes up tomorrow as we record this on the 15th. For October, we're changing around for the 1 month, one clip per person, answering the question of what current titles should people be reading and why. Now, it's one entire clip per person. Makes it way easier for me to edit. But if you want to recommend multiple titles, have at it. You want to do just one, that's fine too. Don't post the titles you picked on the forum. Let it be a surprise for the listeners and for me when I listen to the clip. That's always fun too. If you've never sent a clip into the preview spotlight, excellent chance to do so. Don't need previews. Don't need to find a page number. Just, hey, I read these titles and you should too. So no excuses not to send one in. And for that one, since it's the same deadline as September's previews, name the clip October, spell out October, dash, and your name. And then I'll just play the clips in the order received. Should be a lot of fun, and it gives you a good chance, even if you're not sure, geez, when it's coming out or whatever. Because sometimes it's hard to find a good jumping on point or something, or an issue that's really exciting. If there's a title you just like, good chance to spotlight it.
Sounds like fun to me. I'm so excited for the October one, just to see what people just recommend that they're reading. Especially, I hope there's people that are new posters or new recorders who haven't send in clips, they can send in some stuff now.
I hope so too. It should be a lot of fun. All you got to do is get your smartphone, because most people have one. There's an audio recording app usually on it or free for download. Record, send me the clip via email or whatever, and you're done. It's really not that hard.
Super easy.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And there's so many great titles out there. It's easy for them to get lost in the shuffle. And I've picked up a number of things based on what people have suggested for like the yearly comic spotlight and stuff, that I thought it'd be fun to do this kind of approach to it.
Awesome.
And it means we actually have an October preview spotlight, and otherwise we probably wouldn't, because I'm out of pocket between when previews comes out and the episode would go up. So,
yep, you're out. And I'll be out of town.
I will say, though, that this is the first time in the almost 11 years I've been doing the preview spotlight that I've actually had to do something like this to shuffle around when that episode, how that episode happens and when it goes up.
So it's been a nice long run.
So, yeah. And with November, we'll be back to the regular format and stuff. If this is a popular one, maybe we'll do it again. If it's popular enough that there's more than one episode's worth of stuff, I'll do more than one episode. It's a great chance for people to spotlight the comics they love.
I think that sounds great. That's a good idea.
So hopefully it works out.
Yeah, definitely.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Batwoman number 18 from DC, Extermination number 1 from Marvel, and Terminator Sector War number 1 from Dark Horse.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.